Chapter 2. 1 shilling. 7. Any member lifting his hand to strike another in this club room shall be liable to the penalty of 6d. 8. Any member swearing in this club room shall be liable to a penalty of 2d each time. 9. Any member selling beer shall be expelled from the club. 10. Any member wishing to give up his allotment may apply to the committee, and they shall value the crop and the condition of the ground. The amount of the valuation shall be paid by the succeeding tenant, who shall be allowed to enter on any part of the allotment which is uncropped at the time of notice of the leaving tenant. 11. Any member not keeping his allotment garden clear from seed weeds, or otherwise injuring his neighbors, may be turned out of his garden by the votes of 2/3 of the committee, 1 month's notice being given to him. 12. Any member carelessly breaking a mug is to pay the cost of replacing the same. I was soliciting the attention of philosophers to some old bonnets hanging in the allotment gardens to frighten the birds, and the fashion of which I should think would terrify a French bird to death at any distance, when philosophers solicited my attention to the scrapers at the clubhouse door. The amount of the soil of England which every member brought there on his feet was indeed surprising. And even I, who am professedly a salad eater, could have grown a salad for my dinner in the earth on any member's frock or hat. Now, said Friar Bacon, looking at his watch, for the pig clubs. The dreary sage entreated explanation. Why, a pig is so very valuable to a poor laboring man, and it is so very difficult for him at this time of the year to get money enough to buy one, that I lend him £1 for the purpose. But, I do it in this way. I leave such of the club members as choose it and desire it, to form themselves in 2 parties of 5. To every man in each company of 5, I lend £1, to buy a pig. But, each man of the 5, becomes bound for every other man, as to the repayment of his money. Consequently, they look after one another, and pick out their partners with care, selecting men in whom they have confidence. They repay the money, I suppose, when the pig is fattened, killed, and sold? Yes. Then they repay the money. And they do repay it. I had one man, last year, who was a little tardy. He was in the habit of going to the public house, but even he did pay. It is an immense advantage to one of these poor fellows to have a pig. The pig consumes the refuse from the man's cottage and allotment garden, and the pig's refuse enriches the man's garden besides. The pig is the poor man's friend. Come into the clubhouse again. The poor man's friend. Yes. I have often wondered who really was the poor man's friend among a great number of competitors, and I now clearly perceive him to be the pig. He never makes any flourishes about the poor man. He never gammons the poor man except to his manifest advantage in the article of Bacon. He never comes down to his house, or goes down to his constituents. He openly declares to the poor man, I want my sty, because I am a pig. I desire to have as much to eat as you can by any means stuff me with, because I am a pig. He never gives the poor man a sovereign for bringing up a family. He never grunts the poor man's name in vain. And when he dies in the odor of porkity, he cuts up, a highly useful creature and a blessing to the poor man, from the ring in his snout to the curl in his tail. Which of the poor man's other friends can say as much? Where is the M.P. who means mere pork? The dreary sage had glided into these reflections, when he found himself sitting by the clubhouse fire, surrounded by green smock frocks and shapeless hats. With Friar Bacon lively, busy, and expert, at a little table near him. Now then, come. The first 5. Said Friar Bacon. Where are you? Order! Cried a merry-faced little man, who had brought his young daughter with him to see life, and who always modestly hid his face in his beer mug, after he had thus assisted the business. John Nightingale, William Thrush, Joseph Blackbird, Cecil Robin, and Thomas Linnet, cried Friar Bacon. Here, sir. and here, sir. And linnet, robin, blackbird, thrush, and nightingale, stood confessed. We, the undersigned, declare, in effect, by this written paper, that each of us is responsible for the repayment of this pig money by each of the other. Sure you understand, Nightingale? Ease, sir. Can you write your name, Nightingale? Nah, sir. Nightingale's eye upon his name, as Friar Bacon wrote it, was a sight to consider in after years. Rather incredulous was Nightingale, with a hand at the corner of his mouth, and his head on one side, as to those drawings really meaning him. Doubtful was Nightingale, whether any virtue had gone out of him in that committal to paper. Meditative was Nightingale, as to what would come of young Nightingale's growing up to the acquisition of that art. Suspended was the interest of Nightingale, when his name was done, as if he thought the letters were only sewn, to come up presently in some other form. Prodigious, and wrong-handed was the cross made by Nightingale on much encouragement the strokes directed from him instead of towards him, and most patient and sweet-humored was the smile of Nightingale as he stepped back into a general laugh. Order! Cried the little man, immediately disappearing into his mug. Ralph Mangel, Roger Wurzel, Edward Vetches, Matthew Carrot, and Charles Taters, said Friar Bacon. All here, sir. You understand it, Mangel? Is, sir, I understands it. Can you write your name, Mangel? Is, sir. Breathless interest. A dense background of smock frocks accumulated behind Mangel, and many eyes in it looked doubtfully at Friar Bacon, as who should say, can he really though? Mangel put down his hat, retired a little to get a good look at the paper, wetted his right hand thoroughly, by drawing it slowly across his mouth, approached the paper with great determination, flattened it, sat down at it, and got well to his work. Circuitous and sea serpent-like were the movements of the tongue of Mangel, while he formed the letters. Elevated were the eyebrows of Mangel and sidelong the eyes, as, with his left whisker reposing on his left arm, they followed his performance. Many were the misgivings of Mangel, and slow was his retrospective meditation touching the junction of the letter P with H. Something too active was the big forefinger of Mangel in its propensity to rub out without proved cause. At last, long and deep was the breath drawn by Mangel, when he laid down the pen. Long and deep the wondering breath drawn by the background, as if they had watched his walking across the rapids of Niagara, on stilts, and now cried, he has done it. But, Mangel was an honest man, if ever honest man lived. Totubal, sir, said he, contemplating his work, and I ha made a T on T. The overfraught bosoms of the background found relief in a roar of laughter. Order! Cried the little man. Cheer! And after that second word, came forth from his mug no more. Several other clubs signed, and received their money. Very few could write their names. All who could not, pleaded that they could not, more or less sorrowfully, and always with a shake of the head, and in a lower voice than their natural speaking voice. Crosses could be made standing. Signatures must be sat down to. There was no exception to this rule. Meantime, the various club members smoked, drank their beer, and talked together quite unrestrained. They all wore their hats, except when they went up to Friar Bacon's table. The merry-faced little man offered his beer, with a natural good fellowship, both to the dreary one and Philosophers. Both partook of it with thanks. 7 o'clock, said Friar Bacon. And now we better get across to the concert, men, for the music will be beginning. The concert was in Friar Bacon's laboratory, a large building near at hand, in an open field. The bettermost people of the village and neighborhood were in a gallery on one side, and in a gallery opposite the orchestra. The whole space below was filled with the laboring people and their families, to the number of 500 or 600. We had been obliged to turn away 200 tonight, Friar Bacon said, For want of room and that, not counting the boys, of whom we had taken in only a few picked ones, by reason of the boys, as a class, being given to too fervent a custom of applauding with their boot heels. The performers were the ladies of Friar Bacon's family, and two gentlemen, one of them, who presided, a doctor of music. A piano was the only instrument. Among the vocal pieces, we had a Negro melody rapturously encored, the Indian drum, and the village blacksmith. Neither did we want for fashionable Italian, having non gaianch, and me mancalavos. Our success was splendid. Our good-humored, unaffected, and modest bearing, a pattern. As to the audience, they were far more polite and far more pleased than at the opera. They were faultless. Thus for barely an hour the concert lasted, with thousands of great bottles looking on from the walls, containing the results of Friar Bacon's million and one experiments in agricultural chemistry, and containing too, no doubt, a variety of materials with which the friar could have blown us all through the roof at 5 minutes' notice. God save the Queen being done, the good friar stepped forward, and said a few words, more particularly concerning 2 points. Firstly, that Saturday half-holiday, which it would be kind in farmers to grant. Secondly, the additional allotment grounds we were going to establish, in consequence of the happy success of the system, but which we could not guarantee, should entitle the holders to be members of the club, because the present members must consider and settle that question for themselves. A bargain between man and man being always a bargain, and we having made over the club to them as the original allotment men. This was loudly applauded, and so, with contented and affectionate cheering, it was all over. As Philosophers, and I the dreary, posted back to London, looking up at the moon and discussing it as a world preparing for the habitation of responsible creatures, we expatiated on the honor due to men in this world of ours who try to prepare it for a higher course, and to leave the race who live and die upon it better than they found them. 5 new points of criminal law. The existing criminal law has been found in trials for murder to be so exceedingly hasty, unfair, and oppressive in a word, to be so very objectionable to the amiable persons accused of that thoughtless act that it is, we understand, the intention of the government to bring in a bill for its amendment. We have been favored with an outline of its probable provisions. It will be grounded on the profound principle that the real offender is the murdered person, but for whose obstinate persistency in being murdered, the interesting fellow creature to be tried could not have got into trouble. Its leading enactments may be expected to resolve themselves under the following heads. 1. There shall be no judge. Strong representations have been made by highly popular culprits that the presence of this obtrusive character is prejudicial to their best interests. The court will be composed of a political gentleman, sitting in a secluded room commanding a view of St. James Park, who has already more to do than any human creature can, by any stretch of the human imagination, be supposed capable of doing. 2. The jury to consist of 5,555 volunteers. 3. The jury to be strictly prohibited from seeing either the accused or the witnesses. They are not to be sworn. They are on no account to hear the evidence. They are to receive it, or such representations of it, as may happen to fall in their way, and they will constantly write letters about it to all the papers. 4. Supposing the trial to be a trial for murder by poisoning, and supposing the hypothetical case, or the evidence, for the prosecution to charge the administration of 2 poisons, say arsenic and antimony, and supposing the taint of arsenic in the body, to be possible but not probable, and the presence of antimony in the body, to be an absolute certainty, it will then become the duty of the jury to confine their attention solely to the arsenic, and entirely to dismiss the antimony from their minds. 5. the symptoms preceding the death of the real offender or murdered person, being described in evidence by medical practitioners who saw them. Other medical practitioners who never saw them shall be required to state whether they are inconsistent with certain known diseases, but they shall never be asked whether they are not exactly consistent with the administration of poison. To illustrate this enactment in the proposed bill by a case, a raging mad dog is seen to run into the house where Z lives alone, foaming at the mouth. Z and the mad dog are for some time left together in that house under proved circumstances, irresistibly leading to the conclusion that Z has been bitten by the dog. Z is afterwards found lying on his bed in a state of hydrophobia, and with the marks of the dog's teeth. Now, the symptoms of that disease being identical with those of another disease called tetanus, which might supervene on Z's running a rusty nail into a certain part of his foot, medical practitioners who never saw Z shall bear testimony to that abstract fact, and it shall then be incumbent on the Registrar General to certify that Z died of a rusty nail. It is hoped that these alterations in the present mode of procedure will not only be quite satisfactory to the accused person, which is the first great consideration, but will also tend, in a tolerable degree, to the welfare and safety of society. For it is not sought in this moderate and prudent measure to be wholly denied that it is an inconvenience to society to be poisoned overmuch. Leigh Hunt, A Remonstrance. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.